A Song of Fortune, A Modern Guitar. Chapter 1. Despair about the debate. The blind uncle and head of the family, Edward Laborer, said, "At Laborer Square, the place where we in our offices pray for our well-being and dominion, my family members and my nephews, the Gwens, have assembled to compete for justice." "What exactly took place there, my dearest Ellery?" Ellery said, "Basil Laborer, that noble and distinguished son of yours, being faced with the opposition of the rising popularity of the welfare workers, your nephews, the Gwens, at that time consulted his former professor in political science, James Cooper, and said to him, 'Dear Professor Cooper, now consider these nephews of mine in the welfare business, who have assembled in a union called the Philognostic Association, just to denounce our honest rule.' They managed to get together some people of stature, as there are Aylan's father-in-law, the Honourable Judge Henry Wood Pillar, as also some popular heroes in sports, the baseball player Nick Fightogive and basketball player John Hirofessel, who are just as skilled with the sway of popular power tactics as are Brian and Aylan themselves. And we may also fear their support group consisting of the respected author and psychiatrist Irving Seaclear, the poet Pete Logosmart, Governor Jack Royalfist, Sheriff Daryl Windemall, and the popular journalist Gordon Spearjoy, along with the not-to-be-underestimated priest of great influence, Ernest of Altrue. The philosopher Melvin Menis Whippen, the Olympic champion Jake Axel Veller, the son of Aylan's wife Glenda, are also found at their side, as also Wood Pillar's sons, the union leaders Woodrow and Wonford. But rest assured, we from our side are no less directly and faithfully supported by the qualities of Grandpa Jeremiah, who presides over the Supreme Court, my friend, the excellent debater Audrey Ears, the influential financier Billy Bob Bigrace, the racetrack owner, our first contact with the gambling industry, Pat Horstemut, the internationally renowned writer Sinclair Highear, and the greatest landowner around, Mays Earthsong, in person, along with his entourage, who happens to be the son of the respected labor-friendly governor, Bibi Earthsong. And there are many more great captains of industry, media tycoons, statesmen of international politics, science prize winners, and celebrities of popular appeal to support us at our side. Under the care of our Grey Eminence Grandpa Jeremiah, we have, unlimited in our opulence and influence, nothing to fear from the but limited power and sway of Brian and his Gwen brothers in charity. None of our allies will ever, from the undisputed sovereignty of our position, betray you, I dare say." Basil was glad to receive the message that the campaign had begun. It started with a daunting speech on television given by old Jeremiah, declaring that the insurgence of the family members in opposition should be wiped out. Shortly thereafter, from all sides, the leaders of the ruling powers addressed the common people, through the media giving inspired declarations of support to the proclamation to restore the order and respect for the Many Dynasty. In response, the Fortunate One, another nickname of Dwayne, together with Aylan, on their turn addressed the people via the media, giving interviews on what the science of Philognosy means. Therewith, they claimed human rights in the first place, and they stated that the interest of the Gwens, the volunteers in general, and the people they all served, for the sake of a better income and equal societal participation, demanded all respect of the sitting rule. Alex addressed the people live in public. Constant and Dawn started a great advertising campaign in the newspapers, a site on the internet, and installed posters at every sidewalk. A befriended mayor won a whole city for them. A sympathizing general of the army publicly promised his support. A sympathizing member of the laborer family arranged in all the major towns for the different places to meet. Dwayne's chauffeur, who was never denied in what he wanted, persuaded all taxi drivers to serve the FA for free. Judge Woodpiller promised, together with his family, never to back off one step, and the son of Glenda named Guillaumar inspired everybody with his arranging for a benefit concert to serve the cause. Edward Laborer's sons were terrified about all the support and enthusiasm with which their opponents were welcomed in the diverse media and by the common people, and came to realize that they were pouring oil on the fire. When the son of Gwen, Alan, ready with all his one-liners and prepared speeches, saw how the opposition of the repressive forces of the Laborer Party prepared to intimidate the common people in order to nullify the effect of their campaign of the betrayal of their noble rule and decry all their claims of justice, he addressed, sitting in his car with at the steering wheel Dwayne, the sense master, his divine friend. Alan said, "Please, Perfect Aim, as you also called Dwayne, drive the car to the middle of Laborer Square to face the highly sensitized crowds gathered there to my support and to the support of our opponents for a final public showdown of both the parties. Let me, in the debate, face my laborer opponents convinced of their acquired privileges in pleasing that crooked Edward who's supposed to be our uncle." Ellery said, "O son of many," thus requested, Dwayne, once it was, drove the car to the middle of Laborer Square, where the great assembly hall was, to stop right in between the flocked crowds demonstrating there against each other in allegiance to their favorite party members who stood prepared with all their officials and advisers. With before his eyes Grandfather Jeremiah, Professor Cooper, and all the leaders of the world gathered there in order to follow the unique event of the final debate, the fortunate one said, "O son of Aunt Alice, see how all the members of the laborer family are gathered here." And there, at Laborer Square, at the great Laborer Assembly Hall erected to the honor of the Many Dynasty, Alan saw indeed his fathers, grandfathers, uncles, nephews, friends, well-wishers and the like inside the building, with the crowds of the curious and convinced adherents of both parties outside witnessing the event on public screens. Faced with the huge gathering of his family and the crowd, there was the son of Aunt Alice in the lobby of the building right in between the masses outside and inside, overwhelmed by an avalanche of conflicting feelings, and he stood perplexed, unable to move one more step. Alan said, "The sight of all these kinsmen, O Dwayne, my dear friend, ready to fight each other to the bone, gives me the jitters and frightens me terribly. My sweat turns cold and my body refuses to obey. I don't know what to say anymore and I feel a fever burning inside. The world is spinning before my eyes. I need to sit down somewhere. I'm losing it completely and see nothing in all of this, O great beauty. What's the use of decrying these opposing family members? They'll kill me. I'm not after a victory at all, Dwayne. What kind of world would that lead to? The disunited nations? O friend of the women, what does world dominion mean to us? What happiness can we find in desiring a rule of our own design to hold sway over those friends and family members who have now all taken opposing positions to rule each other out to the point of oblivion. They are our fathers, teachers, sons, uncles and grandfathers for God's sake. I do not wish to rule out any of them, nor that they would exclude any of us, O devil's despair. Never ever I would wish such a thing, not even in my dreams. I am not interested in a debate to defeat the sons of Uncle Edward, O keeper of the world. Such a thing of fighting your own kind wouldn't be anything less than madness. How can one become happy making others miserable, O sweetest of them all? Isn't that stabbing into your own heart? Doesn't that give bad karma? And even if they are as blind as Uncle Edward in denying and defying, in their greed, in fighting and quarrelling with friends, whatever the consequences that might have, why would we, who see all of this clearly, not turn away from such stupendous self-betrayal, O winner of the wealth? Defiling the family this way, all its traditions and hard-won respect will vanish, and the entire family will lose its sense of duty, so each and everyone will confirm. With such an irresponsible attitude, dear Duane, the women of the family will lose their respect for us. This fallen out of grace will no man know who he is anymore. Also, the chance for a good life of our offspring will thus be spoiled, because they, with us having fallen in mutual disrespect, will also fail to know how to exercise respect or confide in any reciprocally healthy and cultured humanity any longer. From these faults, made by all who ruined the family, and because of which confusion rose in society, will thus the righteousness of all classes and age groups be lost. Also, every good habit with the eater we had in the community will be lost. As they always say, those who spoiled the traditions, O spur of man, always turn out to land in hell. Greedy for the supreme rule and its privileges, we've oddly enough decided to act against our better knowledge. I'd rather give up our resistance right now and grant them the victory in the debate. Ellery said, and so, there, right in between the crowds waiting inside and outside, Aelin sat down in the lounge, forgetting about his inaugural address, with a mind full of doubts and sadness.